You've been looking into the management of public housing in Alexander County. Can you tell us a little bit about the area and the city of Cairo?
So the city of Cairo is at the bottom tip of Illinois in Alexander County, often referred to as the poorest county in Illinois by a number of social and economic measurements. It sits at the confluence of the Ohio and Mississippi rivers and was once thought of decades ago as a town that would rival St. Louis, and has since fallen into a state of complete economic despair and rampant poverty and crime problems. There are officials there trying to turn the tide on that. They're constantly up against problems and stories of corruption as they try to move forward. It's a very interesting town. It's got a lot of culture, a lot of great people, and has continuously struggled since the 70s. A lot of problems with racial strife moving forward, and just struggled to shake that image.
For your story, you looked at public housing that's fallen into disrepair. What did you find when you went to some of these housing units?
Some are in better shape than others. There's the Connell Smith building that is on the river for seniors and people with disabilities, and it's not in horrible shape. Residents that are on the third floor or higher have beautiful views of the Ohio River. They do have problems there with infestation and some other issues, certainly, that they struggle with, but I wouldn't say it's more severe than some of the other, you know, area housing authorities' developments that they deal with. But when you go into the family housing units, that's where you can live with kids. The McBride and Elmwood developments in the heart of town, I think some 60% of students to the Cairo Public Schools live at these housing complexes, and they look like something you don't expect humans to be living in these days. Just a quick step inside some of the homes, I could visibly see bugs everywhere, cockroaches and all sorts of things that I couldn't really identify for you, running around in the kitchen and in the living room, and not due to any sort of, you know, inability of the renter to clean. These are not dirty apartments. They just continuously fight that infestation. Toilets are broken in some places, doors that won't lock in others. Things that you count on in your kitchen, like your oven, a lot of that doesn't work for people.
And what were some of the stories that residents told you about their experiences living there?
The residents are pretty resilient. This is what they know. Myself and a very talented photographer for us, Richard Sittler, spent several hours and multiple occasions with different families. And one of the more touching stories that I think we were able to do is with a mom and her three children. Two of them were home at the time when we did the interview, and they came home and they're excited about school, and they're running in, pulling out papers out of their book bag, talking about a pizza party that they'd had. They live like anyone else lives, but they're not happy with things like the appliances not working. Certainly the mother we talked to that couldn't use her oven was unhappy about that. She had a sink that was leaking, and we asked her to show us the leak, and she turned on the faucet and opened the cabinet door. It wasn't a leak, it was just like a full missing pipe, and the water was running into this bucket that she had down there, and she was emptying it four or five times a day. The homes that are the most problematic, the McBride and Elmwood, where the children live, it's predominantly African American compared to some of the other units that are more racially integrated. So there was some concerns there that they were segregating them into the worst apartments and spending money on the others. You know, the folks living there, they're not happy to hear that. They maybe knew that in their hearts, but to hear that come out, you know, they're upset. They're angry.
And while some of these housing units have been falling into this state of disrepair, some of the people who are ultimately responsible for taking care of them have been getting bonuses and perks. Can you tell me a little bit about what's going on there?
Through those HUD records that we obtained and other records that we were able to access through Freedom of Information Act requests, we were able to detail that the former longtime executive director, who is no longer there, had taken quite a number of trips over the years, including in the year before his retirement in 2013. He took about a dozen trips and had a voucher system for travel for him and other employees and board members that was relatively questionable, I would say, at the least, that included obtaining mileage for driving to destinations like Las Vegas and also paying on the company credit card for flights. So it seemed to be some double billing there. And then we had receipts from all their trips that showed there were some pretty pricey meals, $100 a piece, and fancy drinks, several cocktails for $30 for one person at one sitting. There were contracts of a questionable nature, payments, you know, totaling tens of thousands of dollars that were racked up in retirement bonuses that appeared to be some sort of parachute for folks who were let go early. And that might be the kind of thing you would see in a private corporation for a CEO. But you don't typically see that kind of thing in a county government entity, especially not one that's, you know, charged with overseeing housing for the poorest folks in our state. Turns out they, by the end of 14, had trouble keeping the lights on. They hired a new executive director to come in and just on an interim basis help straighten things out. And he said he wasn't sure he was going to be able to keep the lights on. They were so behind on their bill. And making payroll was a very serious issue just to keep those handful of folks into the office that were handling lease agreements and rent and that sort of thing, just your very basic daily operations. So it got to be very serious. And it wasn't just the alleged misspending. There were some federal callbacks on money, but they weren't prepared for it.
Yeah, and I noticed for one of your stories that you talked with that executive director, former executive director, who's no longer there. It seemed like he conceded that maybe the spending was an issue, but that he wasn't to blame for some of the problems, actually, with the housing units. Can you tell me a little bit about what he had to say about the situation?
He wanted to meet with me in person, so he drove to Carbondale, and we spent a couple of hours talking over a cup of coffee, and he was pretty defensive at first and brought me a list of documentation that showed how he had actually saved money by bringing himself back as a consultant and retiring as executive director, but then getting paid. And the more I pressed him and pressed him about how that seemed a bit unusual in my coverage of government issues in the past, he did finally kind of say, yeah, you know, well, maybe we didn't do everything the best we could have. He said, I tell everybody we're just like the state of Illinois. We lived it up too good. We didn't see this coming, and we thought it would last forever. And when the federal cuts came from HUD, we weren't in a position to handle it. That line that I tell everybody we're like the state of Illinois, we lived it up too good, has gotten a lot of traction because he said that as his defense. And I think a lot of people would look at what has happened in the state of Illinois and not necessarily want to lift that up as a defense of any sort.
So what's happening with this situation now? You mentioned that HUD has maybe starting to pay attention to what's going on in Cairo. What's the latest news?
I believe HUD was paying attention in Cairo before we started this series of articles. They were down there. They had done the 2014 review, and a lot of that review is what prompted us to look further at this. I do think that the pressure that the newspaper has applied in its reporting and its editorial section, as well as the reader outrage, has certainly increased the response time and the urgency and seriousness of an investigation down there. And a couple weeks ago, we were tipped off that on a Friday, the FBI accompanied HUD's Office of Inspector General Officers, and that's HUD's investigative arm that goes and investigates misuse of funds, had paid a visit to the Cairo office with a subpoena and spent about 4 hours carting out boxes full of all the paperwork that they had had there, including these contracts we've been writing about and the receipts that we've been writing about.